is Barry Listen Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. The department store entrepreneur John Wanamaker once said that half the money he spent on advertising was wasted. The trouble was he didn't know which half. The same might be said for today's online e-stores. Our guest today is Dr. Chrysanthos Delarocas of Boston University. Dr. Delarocas is the author of a study in the June 2012 issue of the Informs Journal Management Science. A perceptive look at the contradictions involved in online advertising, it's entitled Double Marginalization in Performance-Based Advertising, Implications and Solutions. Professor, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Your paper reminds me a little of the old Western where two gunfighters have a duel and each wind up shooting one another. Before we get to the details of why that happens online, let's begin with some explanations of how online advertising worked in the past and how it's working now. For starters, could you tell us what pay-per-click is?
Sure. In the past, advertisers paid a flat fee to publishers for displaying an ad on, say, TV or a city billboard. This fee was independent on how many leads the advertising generated. Zero leads, one lead, or a million leads, the advertiser paid about the same money. Modern technology now allows us to track the impact of individual advertising messages on consumer behavior much, much better. Therefore, we're witnessing the rise of what's called pay-per-performance advertising mechanisms. In these mechanisms, the publisher is only paid when consumers actually respond to ads. Pay-per-click is perhaps the most popular example of such a mechanism. The idea is that publishers display ads on a web page and only get paid when consumers actually click on them.
And how do Google and Yahoo use pay-per-click?
An important source of revenue for these firms are sponsored search advertising, which are also known as keyword ads. These are the results that are displayed on the right-hand side of a search page.
Right.
Whenever a user types a keyword, these are actually ads which are sponsored by firms. So when a company buys such a keyword ad from Google or Yahoo, it is only charged when consumers actually click on the ad.
I see. And is there a distinction between pay-per-action and pay-per-click?
Pay-per-action is a generalization of the idea of pay-per-click. Clicking is only one out of many possible actions that the user can take in response to an ad. For example, users can send a text to a designated phone number. They can like the ad on Facebook. They can share the ad with their friends. And, of course, they can buy the product. So pay-per-action is the idea that the publisher is paid if and only if the consumer performs one or more of the above actions in relation to an ad.
And I assume that pay-per-action is better for the seller, especially if there's an outright purchase.
Well, pay-per-action reduces some of the proverbial advertising waste because sellers only pay for ads in proportion to consumers who actually engage and respond to them. In addition to that, pay-per-action gives publishers incentives to do a better job in terms of, say, targeting the ad to the appropriate population, since they're only going to get money if the population actually responds to the ad.
Just to be clear, a publisher is Google or Yahoo, or how do you distinguish the publisher from the advertiser online?
Correct, yeah. This is the terminology used in the industry. So publisher is the entity that offers advertising space. In this context, it will be Google and Microsoft and Yahoo. And the advertiser is the vendor who places an ad on the space.
So somebody selling T-shirts, for example, would be the advertiser.
That is correct.
And why is PPA, as pay-per-action is sometimes called, thought of as kind of a holy grail of online advertising, a way to reduce advertising waste?
Simply because you pay for, well, essentially the value that you get, right? One extreme form of pay-per-action is pay-per-sale, which is you only pay the advertiser for sales that have been generated through the ad. And in that extreme form, basically you just pay in direct proportion to the value that this ad has generated for you.
Now, I would have thought that paying per sale is exactly what every business person would find most profitable, but you discovered an interesting contradiction that actually leads to the situation we discussed earlier where everyone loses or at least loses a little. Could you explain what you discovered?
Oh, yes. The key observation is that pay-per-action advertising is transforming the cost of advertising from a sunk cost, basically something that companies pay up front independently of how much they're going to sell as a result of the advertising, to a marginal cost of each unit sold. And here's what can go wrong. What can go wrong when this happens? Suppose that I'm a seller who buys a keyword ad and therefore is supposed to pay Google a fixed amount every time somebody buys something in response to the ad. Then I am better off raising the price of my product a little bit so that I can generate fewer sales but make more profit per sale and pay Google fewer times. That's the key part. In such a scenario, consumers obviously lose because they are charged higher prices. But interestingly, the sum of the profits of the seller and Google would also be lower in this case relative to a scenario where advertising was sold the traditional way.
And you speak about an incorrect supposition made about the way that prices are set. Is that what you were just describing?
No. What I meant by that is that most of the literature so far has not considered the fact that profit-maximizing sellers will change the prices of their products when they shift from traditional display advertising to pay-per-action advertising.
I see. Let me remind our listeners that this is a Science of Better with Barry list of informs. Our guest today is Professor Chris Delarocos of Boston University, who's discussing online marketing. And how does the example of the way a supply chain works explain what we were just discussing about the way things go wrong?
The phenomenon I discovered in this paper is a variant of a well-known phenomenon in supply chain management, which is called double marginalization. The key idea in this phenomenon is that when a wholesaler and a retailer are independently maximizing their respective profits, each of them is marking up product prices, and we end up in a situation where there are higher prices, lower demand, and lower joint profits than in a setting where the wholesaler and the retailer are vertically integrated.
You make a strong statement in your paper that an auction-based pay-per-action advertising, the kind that's practiced by Google and Yahoo and Microsoft, that the price distortion always leads to lower revenue when compared to the old pay-per-exposure method. Why is this always true?
Well, Barry, the precise answer is a little complicated, but the quick and dirty answer to this question is that higher prices, due to the distortion that I discovered, will take place in pay-per-performance advertising, would lead to lower demand and thus to fewer revenue-generating clicks for the Googles, Yahoos, and Microsofts of the world.
And you mentioned that, nevertheless, even understanding that this contradiction exists, that you still feel that pay-per-action is still the better way to go. Why is that?
Well, pay-per-action has several good things going for it. Most notably, it gives incentives to publishers, to Googles and Yahoos and Microsofts to try harder to make ads more effective. For example, by improving the content of pages where such ads are displayed or by improving their targeting algorithms. Therefore, I believe that if we can fix the distortions that are introduced by double marginalization phenomena, I believe that the pay-per-action is indeed a superior method for selling advertisements.
This is the Science of Better with Barry list of informs. Our guest today is Professor Chris Delarocos of Boston University. Now, you offer two solutions to what is technically called double marginalization. And your first idea is based on disclosure. How does that first solution work?
Both ideas aim to discourage sellers from increasing the prices of their products above the level that would have been optimal if they were they were paying for advertising the traditional way, if advertising was a sunk expense and not a marginal cost of every unit sold. So my first idea consists of asking sellers who are bidding for a sponsored search slot to also disclose the prices of their products to, let's say, Google, and then for Google to give a certain bidding advantage to sellers who are disclosing lower prices. So I can show that this idea can induce sellers to keep prices at the same levels as when advertising is sold using traditional display mechanisms. The main drawback of this first method is that it doesn't work if sellers can disclose one price to Google but actually charge another price to consumers. So it's only applicable in settings where there are sufficiently strong monitoring mechanisms regarding actual prices.
So you really would have to come up with a monitoring mechanism. Otherwise, it's not in the interest of the advertiser to truly disclose.
Correct. Yeah, the advertiser always has an incentive to disclose a low price and charge a high price. So this idea really only works in settings where prices are transparent and can be verified ex post.
Which leads you to a second idea that involves the payment of rewards and the charge of penalties. How does that second idea work?
Yeah, the second idea would be to superpose a system of penalties and rewards on top of standard pay-per-click. The idea would be that if you buy an ad but nobody clicks on it, then because, for example, your price is too high and nobody wants to buy this product at this price, then the next time you buy an ad from the same place, your cost per click will be just a little higher. And conversely, if you buy an ad and somebody clicks on it, then the next time your cost per click will be a little lower. So in some ways, it's a similar idea to that of automobile insurance premiums that can go up or down depending on how your accident record has been the last few years. And again, the objective is, what we want to do is to discourage sellers increasing the prices of their products so that they can receive fewer clicks but make more profit when they do so. So, and I show that it's possible to calculate a system of such rewards and penalties that induces sellers to maintain product prices at the levels that would maximize their profits in, if they bought advertising the traditional way.
And once again, as you say, even though the advertiser might not be happy with this, in the end, it's to the benefit of both.
Yes, and it's actually to the benefit of the advertiser as well. The nice thing about my rewards and penalties is that the way that I calculate them in the paper, if the seller indeed adopts the behavior that would be optimal for them, given those rewards and penalties net out to zero. So they would be paying exactly the same that they would be paying under standard pay-per-click scheme.
Now, is anyone adopting your recommendations yet, or is it still too early?
Well, I'm glad you asked this question. I presented my work at both Google and Yahoo. In both places, people were surprised by my results, and their initial reaction was a certain skepticism with respect to the magnitude of this phenomenon in practice. This reaction is to be expected to some extent, given the logistical challenges of changing any of these by now quite well-established auction mechanisms to accommodate what I'm proposing in this paper. But I really think that these ideas need to see the light of day, and what I'm hoping is that some other researcher can follow up on my theoretical work with empirical studies that can quantify how much value society is actually losing because of double marginalization phenomena in online advertising. And once we have a better handle on the actual value, then the world perhaps will be more ready to act on these ideas.
So you're looking for a second researcher to reproduce your results.
And of course, I'm open to collaborating.
Of course. We only have time for one more question, and I thought we might quickly review one of your important papers that was published several years ago by Management Science. It dealt with businesses that go to internet opinion forums about the products and anonymously post their own reviews. How does this practice, kind of shady practice, both help and hurt consumers and the companies themselves?
Well, the main result in that paper was that the temptation to manipulate online reviews essentially leads to a rat race that is hurting companies without necessarily hurting consumers very much. So the idea is that everybody, I mean, every company competing in the space is doing this manipulation to some extent, because if they don't, then they will be at a disadvantage vis-a-vis to their competitors who do it. But what was very interesting is that if there is a substantially large population of honest consumers who are also posting reviews and ratings, and that's the case in the vast majority of domains, such manipulation cannot really make a big difference in a company's, let's say, average ratings or its relative standings vis-a-vis other companies.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it ends up becoming just another component of the cost of doing business in the Internet era.
And it provides a little bit more information about the product to consumers?
Well, it's, in some cases, manipulation actually does provide more information because of the fact that the better company, the company that would have received better ratings from honest consumers, have a higher incentive to maintain its dominant position, and therefore that's, it's the company that has that can actually afford to spend more on manipulation. So in this very interesting way, we find that in some cases, manipulation in fact makes online reviews more informative.
Unusual results. That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Dr. Chrysanthos Delarocas of Boston University. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by Informis, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.